This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, come on. Really? No one should be surprised that I kicked it old school to open this program. I shouldn't have. No one should be. I can't remember the last time I actually played it. Episode 99, I guess. Anyway, welcome, everyone, to your home for everything modern-day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. We are in the funhouse. And we are kicking it old school in that aspect. I have my extra point t-shirt on. We'll see what these other guys have on. in any event, it is going to be a fun show tonight. It is our WrestleMania recap episode. And we're not going to totally recap it because there are plenty of recap pods on the wrestling feed and on placebnation.com for the weekend. But we're going to have a little fun tonight in the A block with that. Then the fun ends in the B block. And we'll get to that in a minute. And then we're going to have a special announcement on our next show in 2 weeks and every other program after that pertaining to match picks, the classic match picks. We're going to change a little things up for the rest of 2020. We'll get to that at the end of the program. Let's bring in the crew. Speaking of the opening, I'm going to introduce him first because I normally don't, but because I see a tear with a tear in his eye as he heard the opening. One of the original members of the Core Four, the conscience of Place to Be Nation, who I know is going to try and keep things in check tonight, Mr. Steve Willey.
I am not only the conscience of Place to Be Nation, but I am your obsession.
That's right.
Thank you.
Every day of my life. Now, of course, also joining us as every 2 weeks is, in honor of the Core Four, we actually kind of Frankensteined Andrew Reich, Ben Morse, and Jordan Duncan into one person, and none of them come close to this guy. He is the purveyor of the Kings of Sport Patreon. He's been on fire with special Patreon-only programming. Hop on. And he's just a machine. And he wanted to wear his old football jersey while Obsession was playing. I don't think any of them would fit Bray Wyatt, certainly not his. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
Brother Scott, Brother Steve, I appreciate that we are kicking it old school. I felt like I went through a time warp because I was, full disclosure, I'm on my way to Fight Island, you know, just to check out what Dana White's got going on this weekend. You know, maybe I went through the Bermuda Triangle, like in that one episode of the Ghostbusters cartoon, because I feel like I went back in time at least 2 or 3 years, and now I'm on this old school main event set.
I know, right? You like it? It's pretty good. We still have. Oh God, I thought we took that terrible. What was that Mike Maroth jersey off the wall, Steve? That we told Steve that we told Jordan Duncan to burn. And sorry, we can't touch the Ricky Jackson jersey for Reich. Nate, that's got to stay. And Ben, I don't know, maybe it's the Thanos bust over in the other wall, in the other room. anyway, guys, we are a few days removed from whatever the hell happened this weekend. the floor is yours, Mr. Willie, for the most part in the A block, because as everyone knows on PlaceBNation.com, there was not one but two reaction shows. We have the normal PTB reaction show in two parts, hosted by Chris Zellner and Devin Hales. And then, of course, you and I, brother, dived into the chain reaction with the gang. You, me, Mr. Chittenden, and Mr. WWE Poopy Pants himself, Chris Healy. I like Chris. Chris is a great guy, but wow. Steve, I thought you were going to be Mr. Poopy Pants. I think your diaper is not going to be nearly as full as his was.
Wow.
But
you know, every set, like kick and, you know, keeping with the theme of kicking it old school, every set needs their Ann Coulter. And if this was politically incorrect from 1999 or 2001, we've got the regular crew, and then we've got Ann Coulter to bring down the proceedings. So Chris was playing Ann Coulter on Sunday.
I am going to send him a message in our chat, our good friend, the professor of politics, and see how he reacts to being called the Ann Coulter of anything.
Say what you want about it, but Chris is, and I've seen Chris's picture. Chris is a good looking guy, but he's not better looking than Ann Coulter, regardless of what comes out of her mouth. In any event, we won't go down that path. In any event, so we've had a few days to let it marinate, and I haven't even cared. I didn't watch Raw, and apparently NXT Wednesday night was not that great, or at least the Ciampa Johnny match is not getting rave reviews at all. However, it did beat AEW by 100,000 or 1,000 viewers.
Yeah.
AEW or NXT actually won the night this week. Maybe they're used to empty buildings and AEW is not. I don't know. But Nate and I gave our opinion. Steve, your general of how much of the weekend did you watch?
I watched all of night one. Okay. And I watched most of night two, except for the matches that shouldn't have even happened, and the Edge and Randy Orton match, because I had several people tell me not to waste my time with that. So, I like, if it was one person, I'd be like, okay. But when several people openly said, do not watch this match, I have to trust that.
That match was interesting, and we had a good discussion about it, Nate, on the show Sunday. The match, I think, would have been really good if it was about 10 minutes shorter. They suffered, and I'm saying this dutifully and objectively, it suffered from kind of Triple H wank disease, where it it probably was fine at 24 minutes, but for some reason, for dramatic purposes, needed to be 36 minutes, even though the last like 9 minutes were on top of a truck, and it was a lot of lying around and sweating, which which it seemed like Edge and Orton did a lot of. I know Edge was trying to reenact the I'm sorry, I love you, even though Orton's the one that did the dirty work. So I don't know how that was supposed to play out. But first off, before we go any further, I want to say I hope everybody enjoyed our live edition of Main Event 2 weeks ago. We had a lot of fun. We had great guests and we had a blast, guys, I think. Right. I think it went very well. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We will bring back the live. We'll do another live. What do you think, guys? Maybe late June, early July, we'll do another one. Maybe we'll do like a mailbag or something, or like trivia or something, but something fun. You know, our least favorite Vince Russo 2002 promos. I don't know, something of that nature. We might have to pay for that one and then put the restricted on. Ooh, yeah, that might be tough. Anyway, I hope everybody enjoyed the live main event. Me, Nate, and Steve had a blast. And we'll do it again. Again, probably like late June, early July, we'll do another live episode. Again, we don't have to give our opinions. Nate and I did it a ton on the Chain Reaction. But so, Steve, before we dive into what you didn't like, and I know there was a decent hunk you did.
Yes.
What did – give us like two or three things you did like about the weekend, and then Nate and I will bounce off it.
I would not have suspected this or called this by any means going into the show. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely loved Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair. And I'm not the biggest Rhea Ripley as a wrestler fan. I know that you like Rhea Ripley as a beauty, if you will, Scott.
I do very much.
God, I thought that was one of Charlotte's best performances.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of taking, and this goes into my second point, but knowing that you're not in front of a crowd and having to sell differently, having to perform differently to the people at home, so it's not a silent match and you're not just listening to, you know, Michael Cole or whomever to trash talk the opponent over and over again. And Rhea Ripley would kind of feed into that a little bit. Ironically, I didn't even realize this until this week that Rhea Ripley has more wrestling experience than Charlotte Flair does. But I thought Charlotte was just a huge ring vet here, working Rhea, putting her down, trash talking her, getting Ripley fired up to come back. It's one of the matches I'll remember for sure. Just It was pretty much downhill after that match for me. Like, completely stole the entire weekend, and I would have probably have put that like fifth or sixth going into the match the weekend about how interested I was in that. So super great match, real proud of that. And the second point I have, building off of that one, is I think that the people who performed the best outside of Charlotte were those who had that indie experience. And I'm not just saying that because, like, I'm a big indie mark. I'm saying that because your guys like Owens, Rollins a bit, but like Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan, those guys are used to wrestling in armories or YMCAs in front of a hundred.
I got a point about that. I got a point about that, too.
Yeah, and so being able to do that, to trash talk each other, to just talk up the storyline, like Rollins, I think, did a good job. And I'm not the biggest Rollins fan either. Getting the story across of, like, you know, you're not to my level. I'm the Messiah. You know, you're
a fat piece of crap.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just to be able to do that, to make it interesting instead of watching in silence. I think, you know, compare it to AEW, AEW's doing a little different, like having some of their, like, Jericho or Cody or Kenny Omega do commentary with Shivani, and it's a little more funny, a little more tongue-in-cheek. They're having more fun with it and just being a little more creative, whereas here, like, okay, we're really getting these stories across. This is not just an exhibition. And those, I think, were the matches that really did the best. Like, even the ladder match, which, while it was impressive, it lacked something for me, even though they were great moves. I thought they were really good picks for the three people that they put in there. But it just, like, without kind of that story, and it's just like, okay, they have to focus so much on their moves and their spots so they don't murder themselves. You don't get the crowd reaction out of an ooh and ah match like that. And so even though they were great athletes doing amazing things, that's not going to be memorable to me. The trash talking stuff, those guys, those Edgars, are going to be memorable to me.
You know, it's funny you brought that up, Steve, about the ring and being accustomed to working in small places with not a lot of fans or whatever. Because, Nate, I didn't get a chance to really – we didn't really get a chance to delve into this topic on Sunday, so – I touched on it briefly when I was talking about my points, but I want to get into it now. I feel like, now again, I was watching it a little, you know, melancholy, because I should have been there, you know. So I was watching it kind of with a different lens. I was a little grumpy, I'm not going to lie. But I did watch it objectively in terms of the wrestling. And I have to say, I looked at it with a different lens, because, as you guys know, when you're watching WrestleMania on TV, on the network, Kevin Bucktooth Fuckface Dunn is too busy looking at hot chicks, big boobs, guys with weird looking shirts, you know, people dressed in weird outfits and stuff. And they focus so much on the crowd that I feel like the match gets lost. Certain matches get lost. I feel like I really had to focus on the match because there was nothing else to look at. And it made me kind of appreciate what this roster had to do. So saying that, Steve, about Morrison, Jimmy, and Kofi, that they kind of had to, like, keep their eye on the ball because they couldn't soak up the juice of the crowd because there wasn't anything to suck up. I felt like I was, like, the match that, the right from night one, when I was watching Alexa and Nikki against my Japanese lovelies, man, I love way too many women in this company.
I love Asuka. I can see that.
God, just talk crazy with the God. And Kairi Sane starting to I'm starting to warm up to her. And I'm not being facetious. And I apologize. I'm not just saying because they're hot or anything. But I've always loved Asuka and everything. And Kairi Sane's growing on me as an in-ring worker. I didn't like her in the beginning, and she's growing on me. But since you mentioned Steve, Nate, I'll go to you. Again, I didn't get a chance to really delve into this with the guys with us on Sunday. Watching this show without an audience, did it seem like you were focusing more on the ring, in-ring stuff than kind of daydreaming to the crowd or whatever?
Yeah, because you, not only did you have the lack of the crowd, but also the commentary becomes less important when there's not a crowd.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
because, you know, as somebody that's done a lot of commentary myself, you can play off of the crowd at times.
Yes.
You know, when the crowd gets more enthusiastic, you know, you raise your levels and you kind of adjust to the ebb and flow of that. And so Cole and JBL just kind of became background. Like, they pretty much stayed at a certain level, only going, you know, up a little bit or down a little bit, but pretty much at the same level. So you really got to focus on the wrestling. And to Steve's point, I think one of the biggest takeaways was a lot of the trash talk in these matches, you know, in Charlotte and Ripley, and then in Seth versus Owens, and even in the ladder match, like Kofi and Jimmy Uso had some good back and forth.
Yep. We're like friends, but we're enemies. And like, yes. Yeah, it's kind of trying to one up each other. That's a good point.
Like, I think you saw the performers, and this is a point that Cameron Hawkins from PW Torch made on the Kings of Sport. We had a live show too, Scotty, since that's like the hot thing right now. We had a live show this past week.
Yeah.
And one of the points he brought up was the people that you always liked stepped up and showed you a reason why you liked them even more. And the people that you had maybe some doubts about, they weren't able to hide their deficiencies because there was less packaging around them. There's less pomp and circumstance. The crowd's not a factor. The announcing can't really help them out. So, like, this was a good WrestleMania in the sense that if you really wanted to see who has the goods, this was the show for you, because you got to see, yeah, like, there are some really talented people on this roster. They just don't always get put in the best situations to be able to shine.
I agree. And I think one match that I was not looking forward to completely, because I can't stand one guy and I really do like the other guy, was Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. And that ended up and I said it on the show, Nate, that ended up being my favorite match of the weekend. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that match a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because of the surroundings. I think if that was in Raymond James and I was there live, I'd probably been like, you know, it's like, because I wouldn't be able to hear the trash talk. Sometimes you can hear it on the network, even in a big building, if they're close enough to the camera mics. But a lot of times you don't get that. Yeah. And I can relate, Nate. Again, I did broadcasting just like you for years, and I did football. And, you know, goal line stands with a crowd is much better than goal line stands when there's nobody. So, you know, I totally can relate to you in that aspect. Now, Steve, match lengths, because everybody gets very OCD about these kind of things. I feel like the title matches, I feel like match lengths fit the opponent, like fit the performers. In other words, you talked about Charlotte and Rhea. That went 20-30. I'm wondering if that match would have been 20 minutes under normal circumstances. Do you think the match, let me ask you this, Steve, do you think that match would have been exactly the same if it was at Raymond James with 80,000 people?
I don't think it would be as good. I think it would have been, if it was 20 minutes, are you saying?
If it was 20 minutes and it was kind of laid out the same.
I don't
like the beating down of Rhea's knee and that kind of thing.
I think it would have still been okay. I think that the crowd would have quieted after a bit. It also would depend on where it was at, because it was going to be one night. So it would depend on where it would have fallen. If you were saying it's going to be like the first regular match, I think people would have been at least up in the beginning for it. I think the yelling and the screaming and the trash talking and, you know, Ripley really selling her knee by screaming and yelling made it that much better. But that's a good question. I don't know. I know it wouldn't be as big of a deal. It would have still been good, but not as great. It probably wouldn't have been my top pick of the card. Mm.
I think they still would have gotten the same amount of time. I think there would have been a lot of matches that got cut, and I'm thinking in particular of Kabuki Warriors and Bliss and Cross.
Mm-hmm. Like, they might have pushed to the pre-show.
Yeah, there's a good chance of that. But in terms of Charlotte and Rhea, and this is no shade on Charlotte, because we all love and respect Charlotte Flair, but I think she gets afforded privileges that a lot of the women on the roster don't. So if there's any women that get their matches cut, it's not going to be Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Plus, it's a title match anyway. So
yeah.
Let's talk about night one specifically. A lot of people consider night one the better night. But some frustrating results. You know what it is? The in-ring, and I said this on the show too, Nate, the in-ring, Steve, was not as frustrating as the results were frustrating. And obviously the one person that probably got boned the most in these 2 days was Shayna Baszler.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Undertaker and AJ.
I think they're boned. They might have put on something that was otherworldly. We'll get to that in a minute. Was that something that was a result of the empty building, or do you think Becky was winning regardless?
I'm wondering if the empty building
changed a lot of shit up.
I don't know. That was a match I was looking forward to and was disappointed by. And I think the reason I was disappointed by it at the end was because it was the exact same damn finish that they did with Baszler to have her lose the NXT title to Kairi Sane the first time. Yes. And it would have been something if that was like the old Cornette saying, like, it's okay to repeat stuff, you know, 7 years later. That was last year. Yeah. So it was in the, and not even, I don't even think it was a year.
Not ago. Even a full year. What was it? October?
Yeah, it was, it was the exact same finish. So that was like, okay, come on. You can't, you know, you couldn't have thought of something else to save if you're going to beat Shayna. I do think that they did, you know, as I'm going down the line, there were a lot of faces that won overall. And I think that probably wouldn't have happened in a full arena setting where you can mix it up a little more. I mean, man, just going through night one, with the exception of Morrison and Cesaro, only faces one. So that's right. out of nine matches, seven faces one. So it was a little
out of nine. Morrison, right?
Yes, yeah, Sammy and Morrison. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, Cesaro won two. So six out of nine. So two thirds.
Well, would Braun count as a face or a heel? Or did that match not?
Exactly. Who knows?
Who knows? Exactly. Let's talk about that. So obviously Roman Reigns, and this story is being elevated to ludicrous levels in social media and, like, you know, the dirt sheets. Like, Roman Reigns is quitting the company because they disrespected his condition. We'll see him at Double or Nothing. Like, who the fuck is drinking this
really?
Kool-Aid?
Who's saying that?
I saw it. Was it The Torch or some guy? Maybe it was PW Insider. I don't know. Somebody, quote, reported that we could see him in – it might have been a message board. Who knows? I read it somewhere. It might have been the Torch. It was probably Meltzer. Who the hell knows? But there was definitely stories that he was upset with Vince because he was disrespected and should have been pulled off the card immediately. That's nonsense. Roman's not that – I think we kind of all know Roman even from afar pretty well. I can't see him being that vengeful. I mean, that's not his style. He's kind of like Cena where he kind of lets shit roll off his back. It looks like they just kind of let him go. And, you know, the company seemed very flexible about these 2 days anyway. So having said that, Nate, would you even have bothered putting this belt up? And Steve, then your thoughts too. Would we have even bothered having Goldberg wrestle?
No, I would have skipped it. I think that, you know, and this is something we spoke about on Chain Reaction. Like, there was no reason once Roman Reigns pulled out to even have Bill Goldberg there. You know, you could have just had a situation where we can't defend the title and Goldberg will just hold it. Wouldn't be the first time that a champion on this program or in this company hadn't defended the belt within 30 days. Shout out to Brock Lesnar. And so I think that part of the problem with the WWE is, you know, Steve earlier talked about the tone of Dynamite during this and how they've had, you know, some of the performers out there and everything. And I think they can get away with it because they've acknowledged what's going on in the real world with the coronavirus. Whereas up to this point, the most WWE's given us is your girl Stephanie at the top of WrestleMania saying that there are things going on in the world without explicitly saying, like, this is what's going on. This is how it's affecting our performance, how it's affecting our show. So I think, like, if they were honest, Scotty, they could have just been like, yeah, Goldberg's like a veteran. He's a legend, and we don't want to put our legend in harm's way. So Goldberg's not defending this month. But instead, we got to go on with the show, and we put a cold as sushi Braun Strowman, as I named him on Twitter. We're putting a very cold Braun Strowman in this match with no build, and the match isn't good. It's like a carbon copy of the match we'll get between Brock and Drew the next night, where it's just a spam fest with each other's finishers. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I guess good for Braun Strowman maybe, but as a viewer, it didn't mean anything. It's a waste of the investment you put in Bill Goldberg. And honestly, if you just, like, again, I keep saying it, if you just wanted to have a match to get the title off of Goldberg, I would have threw Big E in there, because at least they could have made it interesting and entertaining, which Braun and Goldberg was not.
I mean, and I had said this, and I mean, maybe, like I said, maybe Goldberg just looked at Vince and said, just, I'm not sitting here fucking around for the next 4 months. Just get this belt off me so I can go home. I'm done. Like, he's not like Brock. Like, Goldberg's not looking for the money or any of that kind of stuff. Just take this thing off me and I can go home. I'm done. And I think Brock was probably the same way the next night, too. I think he's pretty cooked as well. What are your thoughts on the Goldberg thing, Steve?
I don't think they should have had it. As I thought about it over the week, the only thing I can think of is that, you know, Goldberg's contract was up or something. And this is just me spitballing, that his contract was up and they, you know, he didn't want to come back for the summer. I don't know. I would have just, if, like, we talked about kind of rebuilding the card a little bit with some of these matches, that would be when I would just push off. And it's okay. Like, the thing that drove me nuts about this match was Triple H going on all, like, the phone calls with the media the week before saying, hey, you know, yeah, we know Roman's not going to be on it, but we're going to have this unique special way to take him off the card on Friday. And that was the SmackDown before, and they did nothing. They didn't mention it at all. And so, and I admit to not watching SmackDown. And so I read a recap and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. So I better do some more. I don't want to make that point without exploring that further.
Right.
So I went and read several different recaps from several different people who, you know, respected people. And no, they didn't acknowledge Roman being out of the match at all. So I guess that was the special, unique way they wrote him off. Just pretend he didn't exist for the day. Forget about him. They didn't mention anything about Roman during the match. Right. So, I mean, like you said, Scott, just admit it. Like, you're not, like, everyone that loves Roman after as a person, like, after his comeback, right? He had leukemia. He was in remission. He fought it. You know, he beat it. People like that story. No one's going to think less of him, or no one is thinking less of him because he's taking time off away from this. And I'm sure that, you know, Vince and everyone else isn't upset about it. Like, they were pretty clear that no one's going to be punished for not coming. I know that's one of those things, like, your boss says, you know, you guys don't have to come in, but we're going to be here type thing. But he's not going to get heat for having beaten leukemia a year and a half ago and deciding, you know what, this might not be the best idea for me.
Right.
It's one of those things where they, like you said, could have kept it on Goldberg. You could have waited until SummerSlam to have the big match, and it would have been fine. There was no reason to have a 2-minute match, like you said, Nate, when Drew and Brock were going to do the exact same thing the next night, only, you know, five times better because their finishers are cooler looking. And Brock, right. like Strowman's power slam is not Dr. Death or Davey Boy Smith's or Junkyard Dogs, or, you know, it just kind of falls them. And Goldberg's, God, one of the spears, I think, barely even hit.
Yes.
Yeah, it was not good. It was not good at all. It was a terrible idea. And maybe that's why it was only 2 minutes and they're never going to talk about it again until Roman comes back and squashes Braun in about the same amount of time.
Probably. You're probably right. I bet you we don't even see Braun on TV. Although, I mean, we're going to talk about the future in a second. But All right, I've been ducking and weaving the topic, Steve, but I guess it's time to do it. We had the Boneyard match to close out night one between The Undertaker and AJ Styles. And on Sunday, we had John Cena and The Fiend or The Firefly, Bray Wyatt, in a Firefly Funhouse match, if you could call that a match. It's pretty well known on social media, and pretty, it seems like the opinion is prevalent that people really enjoyed the Boneyard match. Probably because if this was a normal wrestling match at Raymond James, it probably would have been average at best, maybe good, but not much more than that. But here, at least they did do actual moves and they did beat the crap out of each other. And entertained us at a time when they could think outside the box. Sunday, I think, was just because it was John Cena, and they usually like to stick John Cena in like these mindfuck exercises. I think that this fit him better. Whatever the hell it was fun to watch. I wouldn't really call it a match, but it was fun to watch, I guess. It went 13 minutes. The Taker match went 19 minutes. But the Boneyard match was definitely a match. I would categorize that as a match. Bray and Cena the next night was more like a dressing down of the cool kid in school kind of thing. And I don't know if that's because the company is anti-Cena right now and they're kind of shoving him out the door. I don't know. But they were definitely two different productions, to use that word. All right, Steve, give me your opinion. Give us your thoughts on each of them and what your thoughts are on WWE going this way. With this approach on this weekend.
Okay. I will be positive, negative, positive, negative. The positive, I always am for trying something new and going outside the box with wrestling. Mm-hmm. We've seen the same stuff year after year after year, and there's only so many things you can do. So I have no problem at all taking a shot, especially during this time, where you're going to have to find ways to fill time, to do things a little bit different. So I am all for experimentation. You can do it with match styles. You can do it with the presentation. You could try pushing different performers, like shout out to letting Bianca Belair get some shine. So that is my positive. I can appreciate what each one tried to do. I can appreciate that lots of people liked both of these matches, more so the Boneyard match than the other one. I can also appreciate the fact that it's just not for me. And that's no shade to anyone else. And I want to give out a shout out to our friend Ben, Benzani, who just said, you know, absolutely loved the Undertaker match. And he said it was like a really good Steven Seagal movie. And Reeve, you know, we've actually made fun of Steven Seagal in his TNA, you know, the TNA pay-per-view titles and stuff like that. Yes, the thing about Steven Seagal is that Steven Seagal was really cool to me when I was like 18, 19, and 20 years old.
Yes, me too.
And I had a birthday last week, and I ain't 18, 19, or 20 years old anymore. And so it's just,
you're still younger than a TNA main eventer from the shows we're talking about.
Oh, God, yeah.
You're not true. Jarrett's age, or Shamrock's age, or Jackie Fargo's age.
Jackie Fargo!
Yeah, so I thought there were spots that were really cool in the Undertaker and AJ Styles match. I did like the presentation. It very much was filmed in the exact same way as like the Final Deletion stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you hear Jeremy Borash was involved within it, so of course it was. It's just, you know, you you kind of mentioned this with WrestleMania itself, like they just tried to pretend like nothing was happening and that this was all serious. And maybe I'm looking too much into this for the Undertaker AJ Styles match. It's like it felt like that this was supposed to be taken seriously. And it just didn't do it for me. Was it better than an Undertaker match would have been? Oh my God, by far. And you know, I've been like since day one on the main event, I'm like, please don't put Undertaker in a main event in WrestleMania anymore. Please don't do this. And I also felt, man, like they're trying to literally murder each other, right? That's the storyline. They're trying to murder each other and bury each other.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because AJ Styles said that the Undertaker's wife wants him to wrestle to make more money. That's it. Like, that was the only reason why Undertaker was trying to literally murder AJ Styles. So, that's just like the going back to like the difference between this and something like, because I've had people say, well, oh, you like the Matt Hardy stuff. Well, yeah, because that's supposed to be dumb and absurd. Yeah. There were little parts of this that was dumb and absurd, but like there was no dilapidated boat. There was no lake of reincarnation. So yeah, it just didn't do anything for me. Although I appreciated them taking the chance, I appreciated hiding Undertaker's, you know, lack of capability to work in a big ring in front of 90,000 people or whatever. And for Nate's sake, I appreciate the fact that this means that maybe they could do something with Sting next year.
Yep.
The second night, my problem with that one, I thought there was stuff that was really funny. I thought there was stuff that that Bray Wyatt did, that Bray Wyatt said, that was great callbacks to some of Cena's earlier stuff. And yeah, you were kind of cheap back then. We all said how stupid he was back then, like the D's nut stuff, like just his jokes getting lower and lower and lower during the match, during the Firefly Funhouse match. I appreciate like really kind of deconstructing the Cena character. It just felt like, do you guys watch the Edge and Christian show at all? Have you seen any of those episodes?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was an Edge and Christian show sketch. That's what it was. And for something like WrestleMania, I just don't think that belonged at all. I felt more comfortable with the Undertaker AJ Styles match being a part of WrestleMania than I did this one. This would have been a great Raw segment.
Yes.
It would, like, especially with, you know, coronavirus and stuff, having to think outside the box to essentially main event WrestleMania. Because once you did that, Titus O'Neil, one of the stars of the show, being like, what the hell was that? now you go into Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar, and it's just like, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, you can't top that because it's just.
That's a really good point, Steve, because, like, if that was what we got on the Go Home show. And that the Firefly, because I do agree with you that like there were some interesting character beats there with that, and anybody that follows post wrestling, like Wei Ting, had this great write up about, you know, the kind of moments in that match, and yeah, like there's some really interesting character stuff, but it's not a WrestleMania match. So if they had done, you know, taken the last 20 minutes out of the Go Home SmackDown, and that was what led to the match and what really made Cena want to beat Bray Wyatt. Like, I think that would have been very effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you do have that time. And like I said, I want them to think outside the box, and you have to think outside the box. You know, can't throw Big Show into a match for 20 minutes on Raw or something. I'm exaggerating, but you know, to take up time, or there's only so many hour long matches you could put on a Raw to take up time period as well over the next few weeks. So to be able to try this stuff, and some of it's going to hit, some of it's not. I read this before we went on the air. There was like some interview with AJ Styles where I also saw it on Andrew Thompson's write-up for Post Wrestling, reviewing it. We're saying like, hey, I heard that they did one of these for NXT as well. And this is cool that we're doing these things, but if we do them often, they're going to lose. It's not going to be as special. And so now they've done three in 1 week. We're going to, I almost said TNA just because of the Matt Hardy part, but AEW is going to be doing the Elite Deletion coming up. So they're going to have to be careful with this. It's just going to be, it's just such interesting times. And it, like I said, I really do honestly appreciate the chance. I know that these were well-loved. It was not for me, but man, go for it. Cause you're going to have to, you have to try something new.
Yeah. I mean, again, at least Taker and AJ, actually punched each other and actually had balls and actually had a match. They actually beat on each other. The premise part, Steve, I actually thinking about it, you're actually right. But the Cena Bray thing just was, again, it was kind of a mind fuck. and I think you could have used, you could have done that the other night and probably not on, on Sunday. So, all right, why don't we do this? Let's look at the card. Now, we said we were going to have a little exercise here. So we have 19, well, technically 18 matches. Why do they have Drew and Big Show? According to Wiki, they have Drew and Big Show as part of the results, even though it was the next night. That's odd. We're not going to count.
Yeah, no.
That's weird. All right, so there's 18 matches, including the two pre-show matches. All right, we have to come up with one night. Let's pretend that the virus is gone, everything's good, and we're back at Raymond James Stadium, 80,000, including me and a few others. And we have a tight WrestleMania.
Yes.
So let's look at this list. And what matches could we make a nice, tight WrestleMania 36 card out of if the world was normal, if everything was the way it was supposed to be? All right, well, obviously, Roman would have been there. So we, so Roman Goldberg would have been there.
Yeah.
And Drew and Brock.
Yep.
I
think you opened with the given we're under the assumption everybody's there and this is all normal. I think you opened with the ladder match, the three-team ladder match.
Oh, I like that idea. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I like that too. I almost thought of like – and we don't have to do this either. Like, what if it was still the coronavirus was there and we had to do one night, 9 to 10 matches? Like, what would we eliminate? And what we, because like we said, we would eliminate Strowman and Goldberg. But yeah, the ladder match, the one match I will fight for is, and just hear me out on this because you're going to laugh and be like, really, Steve saying this? I would fight for Otis and Dolph Ziggler.
Yes, thank you, Steve. Yeah,
I would because this match. I watched Elimination Chamber. I've watched all the pay-per-views this year. That's not going to happen anymore after this WrestleMania. Or between this WrestleMania.
I mean, I haven't before, so.
Yeah, between this and the TNA show we watch, I'm about to give up wrestling altogether.
See, Willie's finally been broken.
Yeah. After our B-block, we may be giving up humanity altogether after living it up.
That feud in the Elimination Chamber, that tag team Elimination Chamber, that got the biggest pop out of anything the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely have put that match on the show if we're doing like a 10-match show. I think it would be a good – the match itself would kind of calm things down a little bit, but you're building for the finish.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we have 11 slots. Where would we put that?
Oh, geez. Well, what's our – we have our first match. What's our main event, Drew and Brock?
Right, well, which title match would be last?
Drew and Brock.
Drew, yeah. All right. So Drew, I'm writing it down here, kicking it old school since it is the old school main event. Drew Brock, where would we stick? So you don't think that he would put, you don't think Vince would put Roman last?
No, because I think Drew is the culmination. Like Drew's the WrestleMania confetti deal. Like his story. His story was better. Yeah, his story was better told than Roman's, I think.
All right. So we have the SmackDown ladder to open and Drew Brock to close. How about we put Roman and Goldberg like 8th out of 11?
That sounds good.
What do you think, Steve?
8th? Yeah, that sounds good. Right, so I would put Otis and. Do you think you put Otis and Dolph in between those somewhere?
Ooh, I'd put it before.
Two spots in between those two.
Okay.
I'd put Otis and Dolph before Steve, before, so maybe 7, because it's a come down from whatever you put before it, but then it's also, like, we do get that great moment at the end with Otis and Mandy, and you can have, like, the WWE trope of the funny light thing, and then Cole's like, all right, folks, well, now it's time to get serious, because Roman and Goldberg is next.
I would put Rhea...
They love to do that after their comedy stuff. Like, it's time to get serious now, folks. Forget that crap you just watched.
Yeah. Stop laughing, assholes. I would put Rhea and Charlotte 9th after Ooh. Roman and Goldberg. No? Dead spot? Yeah, but it's the two of them, though. It's Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, if any of the women's match could pick up after that, it would be them. Because I don't think you want to put the SmackDown women there, and I don't think Shayna and Becky were hot enough for that spot.
No. I'm trying to see
what I'm taking off of this card.
I would put – now, again, we have 11 matches. So 6 is the middle of the show. That's where I put Edge and Orton.
Ooh, okay.
I put Edge and Orton 6th, and that way Otis and Dolph can kind of cleanse the palate out
of
that.
Yep, and then you go to Roman and Goldberg.
Then you go to Roman and Goldberg, and then Rhea Charlotte. 10, I would put... Taker AJ.
Oof.
No?
I mean, I'm just thinking of Taker AJ having an actual match. Like, oof.
I know. Well, yeah, could they still do the Boneyard match? Or would that look stupid with 80,000 people looking at a screen?
I think that would look stupid. I think, didn't they put Undertaker and Cena at 34, like, kind of buried in the middle? Because that was like a 5-minute match. Because Undertaker couldn't do really anything in that match.
No. This match would not be 5 minutes. This match, if it was regular, if we were in regular circumstances at the football stadium, I can't see this going longer than 15.
Yeah.
Tops. I still think – I don't want to think that Edge and Orton would have gone 36 under normal circumstances. I think it would have gone probably 26 or 27. I think they kind of milked it for – you know, because they could.
Seth Rollins. Seth and Owens would go – yeah, you could put that at 10.
Okay. Seth and Owens. That's not bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Where are we going to put the two women's championship matches, your Bayley match and your Becky Shayna match? And why was Tamina in there, by the way?
I have no fucking clue.
Tamina and Austin Theory needed a runaway.
I was begging Nate for your girl to come in at the end. Samoan stylishness.
Instead of the coronavirus, we got that Samoan thigh lust. You
Samoan
know,
thigh lust, that's
that
what I wanted.
Scola.
That's right.
She would have been a great, well, I think it would have been wasted on an empty arena, but she would have been a great surprise if we're doing this live in Raymond James.
Yeah, I agree. How about we put Bayley's match at 2? Right after the SmackDown lap.
Yeah, that works.
And I thought that match went too. How long?
Yeah, because you start the show with 2 SmackDowns and you end the show with 2 Raws, so it balances out.
That match was 19-20. Way too long. Lacey, Sasha, and Bayley fucked around too much in those last like 5 minutes. And that last 5 minutes really lagged.
Tamina at the beginning of the match, that went on way too long too, where she was beating 4 people at once. Yeah. Like, I know what they were trying to do, but Tamina, you know Nia Jax.
Yeah, that's right.
There's
not many are, Steve Willie. She's not like most girls.
That's right. Her thighs are average.
I call Nia Jax and Nate. Nia Jax average and Nate are the Samoan sweat team.
Samoan sweat. All right, so we got 3, 4, and 5.
There's a hard, a tasteless hard head joke that I'm not going to make, Steve, even though I guess I just did.
How about Sammy and Daniel 3rd?
Ooh, okay. I like that.
And then we have the 4-5 slots. I think we put Becky Shayna 4.
Yeah. And Cena Bray.
And that leaves Cena Bray at 5.
Yeah. Man, I don't know what they would do for that match either.
So we get rid of Elias Corbin, we could put on the pre-show.
Yep. We could put the women's tag on the pre-show.
I would launch Elias Corbin, but I know that they would do it. That would be one I would totally get rid of.
I would definitely get rid of it myself. Now, the good thing is that we have to add a 12th slot because we can't not have I opened with the ladder. Never mind. I thought I missed it.
We kicked it off with the ladder match.
Kicked it off with that. You're right. Liv, Charlotte, Aleister Black, Lashley. Well,
we can launch that. Yeah.
We can launch that. Yeah. I hate launching Street Profits and Garza and Austin Theory, but.
Well, we can launch Austin Theory. He's create a wrestler.
Oh, God. He's a caw.
That guy. If I can just interject, I didn't want to bury the guy, but I will. When we were in New Orleans at the indie shows, like the Evolve shows and the Progress shows, they had him like go over Keith Lee, and they had him go over somewhere else too, because that was when Keith Lee was leaving. And that hot crowd where, you know, like everyone's there to like pop for all the big names, you could have heard a pin drop when Austin Theory won. He's just like the most like, remember, guy. Yeah, he's not even really an indie guy. He's just like he's like the definition of a vanilla midget. Like Benoit and them could work. He's just like this guy with muscles that is completely, and sorry, Austin Theory. Like, I hope you do well, but he was like this can't miss prospect. And like, I think he might've just been the only guy left in the performance center after Andrade went down.
That's funny. Yeah.
So you're saying all that potential is just theoretical, Steve?
Theoretical, yep. Oh, that was a softball. Nate hit that one in the gap.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here is our retooled Place to Be Nation's main event, WrestleMania 36 card, if everything was normal and the card was in Tampa at the stadium. We open with – so our pre-show matches would have been – I think Cesaro and Gulak would not have happened.
No,
I think the women's tag would have been, I think Kabuki against Alexa and Nikki would have been on the pre-show. I think Elias Corbin would have got dumped. I think Liv Morgan and Natalya would have got dumped. Mm-hmm. And I bet you Aleister and Lashley would have probably been on the pre-show.
Yeah.
Street Profits would have been walking around Tampa. I bet you I would have been handed a solo cup that doesn't have COVID-19 on it.
Yeah, the Street Profits and Gronk, they probably would have had a skit with Gronk.
Yeah, you're right. They would have had something with the 24/7 and R-Truth walking around. I bet you R-Truth, 2002 R-Truth's like, man, 18 years from now, I'm going to be having a whole lot more fun than I am right now.
Making a lot more money.
Exactly, yes. So our card is, we open with the SmackDown ladder match. Then the Fatal 5-Way for Bayley's title, then Sammy Daniel for the IC belt, then Becky Shayna for the Raw Women, then Cena Bray, whatever the hell they're doing, then Edge Orton in the middle, Otis Dolph. Wait a minute, I just realized we didn't put.
Wait a minute,
we never put Taker and AJ. Oh yeah,
you can put that there after Otis and.
Yeah, we'll do that there. So we'll put him 8. All right, so we'll do that. All right, so 9. 10, 11, yeah, 13 matches is pretty good. So 8, we'll put Taker AJ. Okay, there we go. I'm looking at that like, wait, what the hell happened? All right, so we'll start again. So we open with
SmackDown. Okay, we can pull that off the card. That's fine.
We open with the SmackDown ladder, then the 5-way for for Bayley's title, then Sammy Daniel for the IC belt, then Becky Shayna for the Raw title, Cena Bray for whatever, Edge Orton, Otis Dolph, AJ Taker, Roman Goldberg, Rhea Charlotte, Seth, Kevin, and then we close out with Drew and the fireworks and all that stuff, again, beating Brock. I think it's a pretty tight card. I think that's a tight card. I think it would have been a good a good 13 solid matches. It would have still gone till midnight or whatever the hell it would have been. Thank God my flight wasn't leaving Monday till fucking 6. So it was not too bad. That's a good card, guys. Well done. Well done. And Steve, you were very tame. Light Steve remains. Steve in the light. You're like Shawn Michaels coming down from the light at WrestleMania 25.
From the heavens.
From the heavens.
We had to give Steve a 3-day cooling off period before we recorded.
Yeah.
Oh,
if we recorded like Monday, it would have been fully Dark Steve. We never would have seen Light Steve again.
So. Brendan watched it with me, some of it with me, and he's like, I want to watch, because that was most of the reason why I watched the second show, because you know, he watched Charlotte with me, he watched Street Profits, because we're big Street Profit fans, watched the Bailey match, and then the Drew-Brock match, and he wanted to watch the Bray-Cena match, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I texted you guys or maybe I texted Glenn Butler, but I'm like, is this gonna be okay? Yeah. But yeah, I was not feeling that. I think my wife took the brunt of it because I was like, oh, why am I watching this? Why am I doing this to myself?
that's a good point, Steve Willie, because I think the like the Cena match, if you're around our age bracket, like. There, even if you didn't like it, you understood what they were going for. Mm-hmm. But if you're a kid, like, I don't know how a kid received that match at all.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there was so many throwbacks that kids would not have understood what the hell was going on. That was strictly for marks like us.
And who does John Cena appeal to?
Mm-hmm.
The children.
That's a good point.
He's the guy at the Nickelodeon Award Show.
Yeah.
And he's pretending to be part of a promo from a TV show that only their parents watched. Mm-hmm. So that kind of does that too. So anyway,
so if we recorded this on Monday, Steve would have been coming out to the NWO theme.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that Hollywood Willie?
Hollywood Willie.
He doesn't work here.
He doesn't work here.
Those might have also been good, better matches to see as a group. Like if you're watching.
Yes,
with other people.
I will say, yeah. To that point, because we did have the live chat going on Skype during night one and night two as well, but I fell asleep during night two, during the Black and Lashley match. But night one, I know, like, my enjoyment of AJ Taker was heightened by the kind of group watch, much like Mystery Science Theater or like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, I watched that at home, and it's a decent movie, but I think the movie is enhanced by like being in the theater and throwing toast at the screen and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, I was actually on night two myself. I boycotted night one because I was too depressed. But I did watch. I did hop on the chat for night two, and it was different. It was different, that's for sure. It definitely added something if you weren't watching it. If you're watching it by yourself, Yeah, I mean, if we had done this Monday, we'd have been like, oh my God, that's Steve Willie from Tough Enough. anyway, for all of your WrestleMania listening pleasure, check out, again, the two-part, although on one post, the two-part PTBN reaction show with Chris Zellner and Devin Hales. And then, of course, the Chain Reaction Pod with myself, Nate, Brent, and Chris. And yeah, I think it's finally in our rearview mirror. There's really nothing to talk about now. Technically, our next pay-per-view is Sunday, May 10th in Baltimore, Money in the Bank. Thumbs up, thumbs down, that happens. Steve?
Thumbs down, unfortunately.
Yeah, Nate?
Yeah, thumbs down. Didn't something already come out where Royal Farms is like, nah, we good, we good?
Probably. Now, we won't talk about it this week. I don't want the AEW fans to throw shit.
They might be stuck back in the PC.
Yeah, exactly. Could you imagine that? They could do that in the PC, really, with the briefcase hanging, I suppose. You know what they should do, honestly? Yeah. They should just have that match. Don't do a whole card.
Oh, yeah.
Just do the Money in the Bank match, and maybe the two titles. Have Braun or whoever the fuck has the blue belt at that point defend the belt and have Drew defend the belt and then the Money in the Bank, and that's it. Mm. Just do a nice, tight hour and a half and not have a full card again. That's just my opinion. I know that's not going to happen, but I'm just saying.
I'd love that. I think that's great. That was one of the benefits to having two nights of Mania.
Yeah.
You're three and a half hours.
It's mm-hmm.
Yep. I think that's something that they should think about. But anyway, I'm not going to throw shade on my brethren from All Elite Wrestling because I don't want people thinking I'm being biased. But, you know, they sat here and were throwing tomatoes and toast and other Rocky Horror food at WWE for, ha ha, you lost WrestleMania, ha ha. Oh, wait a minute. Double or Nothing's a month away. Fuck. And I don't think they're as equipped to handle this the way this is going to be. Double or Nothing in an empty building? That ain't going to fly. And paying $50 for it? Hell no. Not happening. Not happening. I would have paid. I know that we had a whole debate discussion about this, guys, about Revolution and everything. And I thank a good friend of ours for letting me use their Bleacher Report Live so I could watch Revolution. But I would have paid 50 for Double or Nothing. I had no problem with that. I ain't paying $50 for an empty building, Double or Nothing. Not happening. No way. So AEW could sit here and throw stones at WWE, but they've got to look in the mirror in about 3 weeks and figure out what they're going to do, because then their, quote, Royal Rumble, because that's kind of their number two show. Double or Nothing's like their SummerSlam and their Rumble, and, of course, All Out is their WrestleMania. They don't have to worry about Labor Day week, because if we still have issues by Labor Day weekend, then we got more problems. Wrestling's the least of our problems.
Yeah.
So we won't get – we won't throw stones at WWE for the – or AEW for the time being, but maybe in a couple of weeks, maybe beginning of May, they may need to start thinking about what the hell to do in Vegas.
All I'm going to say, and Steve alluded to it, all I will say is people like Matt Hardy, people like Jeremy Borash, their stock has risen over the past couple of weeks, because we're going to need more prepackaged, pre-produced things that don't put people in harm's way.
That is true. But an entire show like that? We'll see. And let's not have Kenny Omega in pre-produced packages, because that'll just be like staring at a lamp.
I wasn't with Steve Willie, but I'm just knowing Steve Willie, I happen to think if he watched Wednesday night, he was not pleased by all the bodily fluids that was spilt in that Britt Baker match.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, Steve, it's probably Britt Baker's best match to date, but at the same time, it's like this is what we're doing right now when we all supposed to be taking care of each other with you know, contact and hygiene and
blood.
Yes,
way too much gigging. No gigging.
You would have thought she was Flair back in Starrcade '88 or something. The way she was. She had that crimson mask.
Yeah, no Starrcade '85 with Tully Blanchard getting a piece of wood shoved in his eyeball. Yeah, that not happening. So anyway, we'll get more into, obviously we'll continue on over the coming weeks and see what WWE plans are. And then eventually AEW is going to have to think about what to do about Double or Nothing, which is May 23rd, Saturday in Vegas. So we'll cross our bridge when we get to it. Guys, great A block. Did I even say what number we were at the beginning of the show?
I don't think so. I was going to bring that up. A, we didn't talk about numbers, and B, I feel like we have a theme because in the A block, Scotty, we talked about an empty arena show, and here in the B block, we're talking about a show that should have been in an empty arena.
Yes, including the wrestlers and the bookers.
Yes, especially the bookers.
Especially the bookers. I'm going to assume this is 146. 146. All right, so we got to find some athletes that are 46.
Listen, I do my prep work.
You do.
And yeah, because
yes, a lot of safeties, a lot of backup running backs, third down backs.
Yeah, I mean, this is a podcast about gladiators. So who better to reference than the American Gladiator host himself, Todd Christensen?
That's right. That's right. Tight end for the Raiders.
Yes. American Gladiators, you can watch on Pluto. They have their own channel now.
They do. You are correct. They do. Quickly, before we dive in, Brother Nate, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on over on the amazingly awesome Kings of Sport Patreon. You, like, were firing shows off left and right. I was getting email notifications like freaking crazy. What do you got going on over there? You're crazy, brother.
Yes, you know, in these troubled times, Scott Criscola, in these hard times that the coronavirus has put on America, Scott Criscola, it is up to, you know, folks like us to provide that content that people need to get their mind off of their troubles. And so, yes, Kings of Sport Patreon, patreon.com/Kings of Sport. Got a lot of new shows up. A lot of shows, because some of them aren't new. Just this past week, we have secured the rights. I'm saying it's like we got a big signing deal. We've secured the rights to the entire run of Keep It 100, which was a show that Brian Mann and I did for Live Audio Wrestling for about a year and some change. And so, like, all of those shows were kind of lost to history, but I was going through some things, cleaning up some files on my laptop the other day, and it's like, oh, there's all the Keep It 100 episodes. So I made a call up to Canada and was given permission to drop those on the Patreon. So if you've never heard of the show, or you know, you haven't heard of the concept, basically each show we take a topic like world champions or hip hop and wrestling or the idea of making a good debut, and we speak about it with a guest, and it's you know, we focus for 45 minutes to an hour on one specific thing, and so yeah, for people that like hearing me and Brian Mann talk about wrestling, that's up there now. We've also got two episodes of TDT Talks, which is a show that Steve Willey and I have recently launched, and the first episode featured Jennifer Smith and Vanessa Shark. And then the second episode featured Tim Capel and Brittany Monet. So those are up there, as well as the live episode of the Kings of Sport that we did last week with Cameron Hawkins from PW Torch. So it's a lot of stuff up. We'll probably, now that we're down to a one-on-one race in the presidential race between Biden and Trump, we'll probably bring Chris back on so he can talk about some fights he's actually excited about. None of this wrestling stuff over here, Scotty. He wants to talk about the real sports entertainers, Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So we'll probably hear from Chris here pretty soon. Nubian Wrestling Advocates. We'll probably do another show somewhere near the end of the month. So, yeah, it's a lot of stuff right now at the Kings of Sport Patreon. You can check it out. Sign up. $5 gets you in the door. If you want to pay more, that's fine. We won't stop you from doing so. But $5 gets you in the door to check out this exclusive content that we hope people enjoy in these hard times, if you will, Scott Crostola.
Yeah, you don't get a gold watch kicked out the door on a Patreon. A computer took Papa Marcus' place, Daddy.
Papa Marcus. This is for the textile workers. It can't pay the Patreon wages. Can't get the podcast.
By the way, I'm assuming everything is well in the Papa Marcus home. Little baby Simba's well. Everybody's safe.
Yes. Yeah, he's out in L.A., so, like, L.A. is, as much as other parts of the country are on lockdown, like, I'd say other than New York, maybe, L.A. is the most locked down because they were one of the first, California was one of the first places to get hit by this. So, yeah, they've been on lockdown for the better part of the month. So,
all right, good, 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 good. So yes, Kings of Sport Patreon, check it out. It's pretty awesome. I am a sponsor, and I'm very proud of it. Things are hot and heavy on our four big feeds, or our two big feeds, our Place to Be Nation, our two brother and sister feeds. On the wrestling feed, of which things are going great, episode 546 of the Place to Be podcast, JR and myself welcomed first-time guest Sean Kidd to review the September 21st, 1990 MSG House Show. Check that out. As I mentioned, plenty of reaction to WrestleMania 36, Chain Reaction with myself, Nate, Brent, and Chris, and then the two-part PTB reaction show with Chris Zellner and Devin Hales. The Doctor and I have brought back the NWA Saturday special after a few weeks to kind of get our lives adjusted. Obviously, no powers to cover, and obviously we don't know when the Crockett Cup's going to be, so we're doing some history stuff. Last week, we recapped the 70th anniversary show that the NWA did in October of 2018. This weekend, we'll have another show to recap for you that NWA did in the William Corgan era. So look out for that coming up on Saturday. They usually drop on the website and on the feed at about 9 in the morning, so check that out. Jake, Jenny, and Tim back with PTB NXT number 3 to cover weekly TV from February 20th, 2014. Ben Zani, speaking of Ben, Row 1 Seat 1's newest episode features superfans Tiffany and Sean to discuss the impact of independent wrestling on their lives. The Special Relations are back with episode number 6 featuring guest Jennifer Smith's underrated WrestleMania, her happy place, and a live watch of her favorite match. And then they'll be back with a special new with another episode this weekend, so check that out too. On the Adams Division number 7, Steve Bennett and Peter Winson chose WrestleMania matches in a complicated thought exercise. Knowing the two of them, I'm sure it was very complicated and very thought-provoking. Knowing the two of them. One guy was asking way too many questions, the other was throwing shit against the wall. But we love both of them. You Don't Know Billy Jack finds Drew and Jordan talking Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13. And I think it's safe to say Steve Willie, not one match this weekend, came close to that. In any event, the Place to Be Wrestling feed is awesome. Tons of great shows. New stuff on the horizon. In fact, a new show. Speaking of special relations, guys, one of the special relations gentlemen from over on the pond, one of our mates, is debuting his new show this Monday. Stay tuned to the Place to Be Wrestling Network on Monday for the debut of a brand new show hosted by one of the three members of the Special Relations podcast. So stay tuned. It's a great, great concept. I'm very excited about it. I think you guys will too. Over to the Pop feed, great shows. Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular Diamond Conversations. It was a thing on TV. Year in Pop. New one just dropped yesterday. Myself, Mr. Atherton, the Doctor, and Mr. D'Amato did 1981. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. That was one of the best years for a lot of things. Laugh in Theater, Great Debate, Marvel Age, so much more. So subscribe to the Place to Be pop feed as well. While we're at it, our other sister feeds, our affiliate feeds, if you will, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, Journey Through Infinity, which I am on, and much, much more. And then, of course, the new North-South Connection, brought to you by my PIC, Mr. Azzaro and Chad Campbell. It's the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, so much more. As a matter of fact, of course, Chad Campbell starting a new show called The Spirit of 06. Have either of you guys checked out the first episode yet? He did the first Raw of 2006. It's a lot of fun. I'm really pumped for this. Chad is going to look at North American wrestling in the year 2006.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So check it out. It's a quick listen. It's about 28 minutes. I'm sure not every episode will be that short or long. I mean, it could vary based on what he's doing. But he's going all around North America. So it's not just WWE. He's going to do TNA, probably Ring of Honor, and some other indie stuff in 2006.
That's peak TNA time right there.
Yeah, it is. No,
05, 06, 07.
Yeah, I'm jealous because what we got to watch is nothing compared to what they get, but what Chad gets to watch.
This is peak TNA, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Listen, bro.
TNA, bro. You fucking wench. So check out the new North-South Connection podcast feed by my PIC, Mr. Azzaro, and Chad Campbell. We have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You all have a year to do, well, right now, just under 9 months, and since you have nothing better to do, watch matches. Do your research, promote your matches, build your list. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. And as a matter of fact, at the end of the show, we're going to have a special announcement on a little format change to the Place to Be Nation's main event on this show pertaining to that stretch project. So hold your horses. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. On our social media pages, the greatest sports logo tournament of 2020 is going on. 4 matchups per day. We're getting close to the end. Follow us on Twitter so you don't miss a single one. As a matter of fact, guys, we announced, I announced on the Place to Be podcast this past Monday, the newest topic, the next tournament that will be on the PTBN tournament page. You guys ready?
Yes.
The greatest junk food tournament. Junk food. Now, of course, we did candy. We did the candy tournament. Andy's candy. He did the candy tournament, which, of course, was won by, deservedly, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups because there's nothing else. But junk food. Now, guys, right now I'm kind of in a Doritos sweet and spicy chili mode. That's the purple bag. Damn good. Then, of course, there's Tasty Cakes and Little Debbie's and fucking Tim Tams and all sorts of other stuff.
Nutty bars. Nutty bars are the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups of Little Debbie. Mm.
That's right. Oh, my God. Funny Bones, Yodels.
I'm telling you, the sleeper seed is going to be Zingers because they got everything a Twinkie had, and they had the little filling on top.
That's right.
And they even had
what were those called? What was it was the chocolate like sandwich with the cream in the middle.
Whoopie pie?
No, not whoopie pie.
Ho-hos?
Not ho-hos. It was like a cake. It was like two pieces of like fluffy cake. And it had, what were they called? They had Q in it.
Cutie pies?
Cutie, something like that. I'll have to look it up. Yeah. Anyway, those are awesome too. Then there's Hostess Cupcakes, which is, of course, the cupcake with the little swirly on the top.
So we're going to have the Hostess region, the Dolly Madison region.
Dolly Madison region. Tasty Cakes region.
The Intimates region.
That's right. Oh, my God.
The Dolly Madison apple pies. My buddy and I used to walk down to the comic book store, get a comic, get some baseball cards, go to the record store, get a cassette, and then go and get us some Hostess or Dolly Madison apple pies. Oh, man.
Yeah, the Hostess fruit pies were unescapable in the 80s because they were in every comic book. So it's like, why is Superman arresting a bank robber with the power of cherry-filled Hostess fruit pies?
Oh, so good. They were so good, too. Oh, my God. So anyway, that's the next tournament. So stay tuned for that. Don't forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. New voices.
Grandma's cookies.
Grandma's cookies. articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and don't forget about veteran columns like Steve Willey's favorite, Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out the website with no cost to you. Mm. So, again, a lot of fun stuff going on all over the place. Placetobenation.com, our Wrestling Network feed, the Pop feed, Jenny Position, No So Podcast Network, lots of great stuff all over the place. And with WrestleMania in the rearview mirror, a lot of fun stuff coming up. I got a special movie franchise series, mini-series, almost a series event, if you will, starting at the end of April, beginning of May, which will be debuting a new voice to the Place to Be Nation pop feed. So stay tuned for that coming up in about a month. All right. Steve, there's nothing enough for me to read. I did the best I could. There's nothing left to read. We got to go. We got to do it.
All Did you know this show was sponsored by an article of junk food, Steve Willie?
No, I didn't know that.
I believe it was sponsored by Whatchamacallit, because I don't know what the hell we're going to call this show.
I love right. Whatchamacallits.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. That was our close, right? That was the close?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just giving it to you early, because I don't know if I have the energy after we go through this show.
So what you didn't have one last week. You didn't have one 2 weeks ago on the live show, so you have to use two this week. So, all right. So the date is December 4th, 2002, from the fairgrounds in Nashville. It is the 23rd edition of the NWA TNA weekly pay-per-view spectacular. On the cover of Sports Illustrated that week, gentlemen, I won't even bother making you guess, but it was another guy that has been forgotten by time, Ohio State running back Maurice Claret.
I was going to say Maurice Claret, yeah.
They had just beaten Michigan. They were 13-0. They were heading to the Fiesta Bowl to defend their title, I think, they would eventually take on the defending national champions, the Hurricanes of Miami. And we know what happened there. So that's who was on the cover of SI this week. All right. When we last left this fine promotion, Jeff Jarrett was being questioned or demanded after Ron Killings got beat down by Vince Russo or something of that nature. Vince Russo wanted an answer. Was Jeff Jarrett with him or against him? Apparently Vince Russo just walked in and decided he's taking over the place while Bob Armstrong was talking Southern backstage. Okay. So what is the deal tonight? We also have a great card, or do we? We have one good match. We seem to say that a lot. Mr. Willie, get us going.
So they went back to the previous show after the sign-off. We saw Truth take down Russo. They're rolling around trying to punch each other, and it's like, oh, yep, they're trying to pretend it's a shoot. Harris's come to the ring, shove kind of Russo off, take him to the back through the crowd. So immediately I wrote down, and I did not know this was coming, but it was clearly foreshadowing that the Harris's were going to be joining Russo. Yeah. So we come back to the arena live, and bagpipes are playing. Perhaps my favorite part of the show, right in the first couple minutes, are the cage dancers grinding to Piper's bagpipes. If you want to go back and see this actually happen, they were doing their little grind while the bagpipes were playing. So it was quite good. Roddy Piper comes out with, I believe, his son. He didn't really announce who that was.
No, not at all.
Yeah. He's there to basically plug his book, but he's also there to help the boys in the back because he wants to shoot on Vince Russo. You know, he didn't want to become a wrestler at first. He wanted to become a family. And that's what he talks about in his book. And he goes through some of the pictures. And then this is like, you knew things were going to get awkward for the rest of the show when Piper asked Vince Russo if he wrote in his, Vince Russo wrote in his cousin Owen's death into the WWF storylines. And it was like, whoa, okay, that's holy shit. Let's just drop right to it.
Yeah.
So just a hush falls over the crowd after that happened. So here comes Vince Russo. He's coming out of the crowd, jumping over the guardrail again, because he is so cool. He tries to talk back to Piper, who's just shitting on him. Piper won't let him get the microphone. Eventually, the Harris has come out to separate him and once again take Vince Russo away. I loved this part of the show for one singular reason. Mm-hmm. Russo in the corner trying to look tough because he's got like, I got this laissez-faire look on my face. Yeah, I'm real cool. You're not saying anything that's bothering me. But his body language is just the opposite. He's like slinking back in the corner and you can tell he's unnerved and that Piper shook him a bit, and then Piper getting in his face, and I think he slapped him a couple times too, if I remember right. And it's like he's trying so hard to be cool. And perhaps like the thing I hate most about Russo is the fact that he honestly thinks that he's a tough guy.
I know.
Like he really tries to, you know, like later on in the show, he's like tries to take down Truth. He tries to shoot a double leg at him. He honestly thinks he's a badass and that none of these people are going to be able, like any one of, like you can get Joel Maximo in there and Joel Maximo is going to kick his ass. Amazing Red's going to go in there and kick his ass.
Oh, Amazing Red would definitely shoot on him. There's no doubt.
Yeah, like just throw a bunch of kicks in. So that was, Piper's what here? Like can barely walk. and he's backing Russo up in the corner and Russo is freaking out. So I don't want to get too much into these promos because they're really, really like Piper's was fine. You know, you can tell he hates Russo and that, you know, Russo wanted that into the show a little bit. But I think Russo wasn't ready for him to drop Owen Hart's name, nor was I for that matter.
No, I wasn't either.
As a matter of fact, like Steve, Piper actually had to give a formal apology to the company the following week because none of that was cleared. Like he didn't let anybody know he was going to drop the Owen Hart reference.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's his cousin. I mean, it's legit his cousin, right? Like not like makes necessarily the first cousin, but they are related.
Yeah, like they're certainly like they've got the bond there, and so like I don't know how much, and you know you talked about Russo. His body language. Like, I don't know how much Russo knew how far Piper was going to go.
Right.
Like, I think they probably had a general outline. But, you know, you can't put Roddy Piper in the box. Nobody puts Piper in the corner, Steve Willie. So, I don't think Russo or anybody in the back were ready for the content of this promo.
Yeah. I was kind of okay with it. To be honest with you, it was shocking, but like he's got a point. He's basically family, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember reading in Brett's book that Piper was the only wrestler who came and visited him when he was in the hospital after a stroke. So you know they are that close, that the families, and so like
took off his jacket and he had like all the wrestlers that had passed away on his shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Like I thought that was a really good image.
Mm-hmm. And he was in just for one time, I believe. He was just promoting his book. Like Scott, you said he was at the next Mania, which is only like 3 months away at that point.
Right. Yeah. So like,
wow. Yeah, it's interesting.
And I was saying to you earlier, Steve, when we were in between during the break Russo just looks like such a scumbag, though. Like his hair and he looks like he sleeps at the bus station. Like he looks like a drug dealer or something. Like he just looks so disgusting, which I guess is par for the course with everything else. But
and his jacket and his pants didn't fit him either, which just added to it.
They look so saggy.
Yeah.
Boy, and I just kind of want to take the Russo stuff. Like, I want to go quicker than we are, but it's either this time, and I think it might be the next promo where he's trying to be like, you know, he's coming out of the crowd like he's an outsider, and that he says several times that he's part of the staff, that he's part of the charge, and Piper's saying it too. So he's like, yeah, these NWA guys in the back, blah, 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 blah. And the only reason I'm here, it's just like this weird, like he's trying to shoot and not go off a script, but there's so many fundamental flaws in what he's saying that he is the one in charge.
And you mean a promo not making sense? Oh, wow. Yeah. I never saw that before from him.
But Bullet Bob is not booking Mortimer Plumtree.
No. No. On a side note, we did have three dark matches. I want to mention these. Kid Cash pinned Larry Valentine. Sonny Siaki beat Ron Sexton. Now, Sonny Siaki was supposed to be on the main show. We'll get to that in a minute. And Jason Cross pinned Jimmy Rave.
No.
Of course, would be more well-known down the line in another promotion. All right, so that's a shit show.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it did. I mean, Piper was hugely over. It did.
Yes, he was.
Build Russo to be a heel, although Russo tried to undo it in the next segment. but then tried to... Okay, yeah, whatever. So, first match. We had the SATs going against Divine Storm with Trinity. They played this, reminding everyone that they trained together, the four of them, so they're going to know each other really well. They implied, I don't know if they said straight out that they're going to be the number one contenders, but they said they'll be top contenders, whoever wins this match. First two guys start out, we may have said this before, but it's worth saying that Chris Devine and I think it was Jose Maximo were 18 and 19 at the time of this, which is crazy.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in this match. Some of the more innovative spots, the Maximo's like a monkey flip over the top rope into a tope going to low. I thought this kind of felt like an exhibition at times where they were just like kind of showing off moves. There's a cool move where one of the Maximo's did like a reverse pendulum Boston crab and the other one jumped over the top to give a leg drop. Don West drop, he's like, they should just put Red and Trinity in here and make this a six person. And I'm like, that's actually not the worst idea that I've heard. End of the match comes when the SATs are going for the Spanish Fly. Trinity, who got involved a couple times in the match, just like she has, hopped in the ring and actually gave them both a low blow, which is kind of a surprise. And then the Divine Storm end up winning right after that with a surprise pin, and Divine Storm apparently becoming the number one contenders to the tag titles, despite the fact that they're now heels? Because isn't the Church the champions at this point?
The Church are still the champions.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, Trinity cheated to help them win. So
Yeah. Church versus Divine Storm. Okay.
You do need to boost this tag division somehow. Your match time 7:33, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a very much of a Lita quality to her, like the poor woman's Lita. But they bring up that she's a legit stunt woman.
Yep.
She's strong. She's, you know, doing runas and flying at the top rope. So she does fit more so than the other women.
I like this match. But at the time, the tag division was clearly very thin and they needed to boost tag matches, and they're the opposite of AEW. AEW is overloaded with tag teams. TNA at the time had barely any. But it was a fun match. Good pace. Good time to have this match considering what was coming up next. kind of get the crowd in a groove, Nate. But a fun match nonetheless. And again, this tag division needs to be built.
Yeah, it was a good little match. It didn't quite click at all times. I do agree with Steve that at times it felt exhibition-y or even indie-rific in certain spots, but this is more the stuff that I'd rather see these guys getting TV time and getting to work out some of these kinks and getting reps in than, you know, the Harris brothers.
getting a match every week, you know, because these are the guys that should be at this point the future of your company. So while it wasn't like the best match on the show, I thought it was a decent little opener, and anything you can do to give these teams more experience is a good thing.
Absolutely agreed.
Definitely. All right. We're supposed to have a next match, but something happens before that match starts, and at least it's early, Steve, and we can get it out of the way.
Yes. So Russo's back again with the Harrises, you know, coming to get him in the ring as well. Talks about, you know, the NWA has the senior citizens in charge, and this is where he was acting like thinking he's legit tough guy. So he's going to bring all the edge, and he's going to bring what everyone wants. So he starts asking the crowd, despite the fact he's been a heel. Now he's like, you want, you know, the TNA, you want the violence. And the blood. So we're going to bring you Sports Entertainment Extreme. Spell out the acronym, spell it out. And like, oh, that's, you're so edgy, you can't say sex. But then later on, you're going to be, you know, in segment 3 out of his 4 segments that he has tonight. That was the other thing, part about it too. It's like, I try not to write the promos down for this because it was hurting my head. That he's saying that he's an outsider and that he's going to come in and change everything. But in the same sentence, he says how every week that I come here, he's saying that he's there every single week, yet he's the big outsider coming in through the crowd. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Is this where Athena comes in too this point?
Yep.
I just stopped writing.
Athena comes in and they keep chanting your name and chanting your name and they want to see you. So go ahead, take him off. And she's looking at it, and then he starts dressing her down and calling her by. There's a lot of bleeping, so I'm assuming he's calling her a whore or a slut or a wench or something. I don't know. And
a woman of ill repute.
A woman of Jezebel.
You harlot.
And then at this point is when we finally get the very unpredictably predictable. Russo kind of persuades the Harris brothers, and they're pretty much now in Russo's camp, and they, you know, do what really good upstanding men do, beat the shit out of Athena and suplex her like 4 times. And then he's yelling in her face, calling her a fucking whore, and she's got saggy tits. And I mean, I'm watching this today, and I'm saying to myself, this is a new promotion. It's what, about 8 months old now, right? They debuted in May.
Yeah.
So it's about 8 months old. And this is what you're doing? This is edgy and innovative and an alternative to WWE, who at this point, 02, was still really not too bad. Ruthless aggression. What the fuck is this then? Ruthless obscenity.
He was getting off on this. He really was.
He was definitely virtually whacking his pud.
especially after getting it handed to him by Piper. Same thing with the body language. Like, he's all in her face, and he starts, he hits her. Like, it's just like, and like the smile on his face and the smirk in it is like, he's getting off on it, and he's just like bringing it more and more and more, building it up. And it was just disgusting. I like I said, you know, between WrestleMania, which bothered me in a different way, and this is like, man, what am I doing with my time? And then I realized I really have nothing else to do, and I'm bored out of my mind, so I guess.
Yeah, this was bad, and I think, you know, for a couple of reasons. Number one, to bring up the AEW comparison, like you said, Scotty, imagine if this took place today. And it's not that hard to imagine, because Vince Russo, regardless of what he says on Twitter, is the same dude. So, like, if Tony Khan wrote Vince Russo a check, we would get something similar to this on an AEW show. And imagine how that would play out today. Like, nobody would go for it. Like, I don't even think, like, the people in the company would go for it. It's just so, like, out of touch and outdated. And even then, you know, in 02, it was still an outdated concept from a few years earlier. But then the other thing is, like, you forget that there's these little weird characters in the early days of TNA that kind of took off, and I'd forgotten all about Athena until I watched this, and it's like she was somebody who was on the independent scene, and she was like a manager and stuff like that, and like for whatever reason, that Asylum crowd was into her, and it's like, yeah, this is the best you could come up with for this person, is we're just going to demean and abuse this woman on TV, and she really doesn't get any comeback, spoiler alert for future shows, like she really doesn't get any comeuppance. And so it's like, yes, to Steve's point, like this is just Vince Russo overindulging his most Russo tendencies.
Yeah, pretty much. It was disgraceful. It was disgraceful. And he just, I mean, he literally looks like he looks like a guy that owns one of those Penny Arcade or Penny Strip Club peak show kind of things, like on the Deuce on HBO.
So bad here.
I mean, he just looks utterly, he looks like a guy that drives around in a panel van. You know,
listen, bro, I got candy in the back.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry.
Dolly Madison.
Dolly Madison. Don't worry about the carpeting and the duct tape. You know, it's like, it's just disgraceful. And I'm saying to myself, Jeff Jarrett, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, do we really have to go this path? This is what you're trying to compete with WWE with at the time. I mean, this is disgraceful.
And to Steve's earlier point, like one of the worst things about it is we're not quite sure by the end of this, like if sex is supposed to be the good guys or the bad guys because of the way Russo writes.
Right.
Yeah. He's trying to get himself over. Yeah. And it's just bizarre. It doesn't fit in any way. Like he's trying to get booed. He's trying to get cheered. He's just desperate for attention and thinking that people want to see that when, and especially in this case, they have to pay $10 a week for wrestling. I mean, you're talking before about $50 for four shows each in a year. So $200. If you wanted to watch this, it was $520 a year.
I know. And it's fucking garbage. I mean, and this is one of the first, this is one of the few shows where a huge majority of the in-ring doesn't help matters. At least the Bruce, yeah, you know, homophobe stuff is gone from this. Thank God.
Brian Lawler, yeah, I just remembered that. Like, Brian Lawler wasn't on this one either.
Yes, yeah, so what do we get, an upgrade? We get rid of Brian Lawler and now we get Vince Russo? Is that an upgrade, a downgrade, a lateral move? I don't even know what the fuck it is. Anyway, Russo had what interrupted what was the opening the first of a back-to-back match situation, yeah, involving America's Most Wanted and the Disciples of the New Church, who are the tag team champions. Chris Harris was wrestling Brian Lee, and in the following match, James Storm was wrestling Slash. And if AMW won both matches, they would get a handicap. They would get James Mitchell with a bull rope later in the show.
Yes.
So, Steve, floor is yours.
All right, so, yep, everyone is out. Chris Harris is now upset, so Tanae's yelling at them like, hey, I'm on your side. Mm-hmm. Man.
Tanae might have been the best performer in this segment, Steve.
Yeah, he really might have been.
He really was. He's like, "This, I've been working with this guy for years. I told you, you know, I'm like, stand my side." It broke down. Right away, they started fighting each other on the floor, which was great because that's where it has gone the last 2 weeks in this feud, is that it's just been a bloodbath. So then eventually, where they started there, it broke down into a regular singles match, which was like, okay, after 2 weeks of blood feud, we're just going to have a basic match between the two of them. Eventually, Belladonna gets up and it interferes, gets in the ref's face, which will be a theme for this night. Lee goes for a foreign object. I didn't see exactly what it was, but he turns around with the object and gets speared by Harris. So a quick win for Chris Harris after a few minutes. So that means that Chris Harris will advance to the three-way bull rope match against James Mitchell, which, again, another thing, like, you knew kind of what was coming there. So, yeah, just a quick little match, really just to set up the match coming up with, you know, it's just a bizarre show. I'm so rattled from the Russo promo and beating that up, and which I was during the match itself. I wasn't even really paying attention because I was more thinking like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I like Chris Harris, so I was, you know, yeah. I was perfectly happy with it. But I feel like sadly it got lost in the shuffle with what had happened before. Like that funk. That funk is still there, and it kind of, I feel like it took away from the match, Nate, a little bit. But Chris Harris had to win. But I mean, we were talking about this feud kind of being lukewarm in the beginning, but I feel like it's actually kind of picked up a little bit.
Yeah, I think even in the best of circumstances, this match, like, they have little margin for error in terms of the edge of what makes a good match and what makes a barely passable match. Right. And this is not on AMW. It's more on the New Church side. And so I think, like Steve was saying, all the extra Russo stuff around it brought it down. Like, it was solid for what it was, but it was, out of the two AMW matches, it was the lesser one of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Which brings us to the other half of the equation, because they were already outside the ring, so they just good time saver here by TNA to not have to do
that was
multiple opens.
Yeah, they just did a super quick backstage with Bullet Bob asking Truth if he could, or Truth asking Armstrong if he can go take out Russo. So Armstrong says he can tag with Jarrett.
Again, so then, like, now Truth is a face, question mark?
Right. Yeah, and if Armstrong, and later on this is true as well, if Bullet Bob really wants to take out the Harris brothers and Russo, why would he put enemies together? Why wouldn't, like, if he wants Truth to do it, why wouldn't he find someone? Like, who is with Truth for a while? I can't recall.
Oh, Elix.
Elix.
Elix
and there
Skipper,
was one other person, yeah. You know, or have Jarrett find a friend. He had a bunch of cronies with him as well. So, yeah, immediately cut back. They didn't do the introductions again, which had been a problem in the past and a critique of mine. So they're already there. They just jump right into it. Slash versus Storm. Slash is on top from the start. Apparently low blows are no longer DQs because we've seen a lot of them already. That was how Storm got back into control from Slash. Belladonna, again, hops up on the apron, apparently not learning from the last time. Slash throws powder in the face of Storm, which the referee turns around and sees the huge cloud of dust in the air and is just like, huh? That only gets a two count. Storm comes back with a spinning death drop onto a chair. I thought for sure that was it, but that was only a two. They're absolutely, like, there's a hit with a tag belt. That gets a two. No disqualifications here, by the way. And Harris comes in. Again, there's distraction. The ref is just not paying attention at all. And they hit the death sentence onto Slash to win it. So we're going to have Harris and Storm versus James Mitchell in a bull rope match. This is essentially when the same thing as when the heel manager gets 5 minutes with the good guy. You know that it's not going to end up well for the faces.
Yeah, like I was saying, I thought this match, even though it wasn't great, I think I liked it a little bit better than the Harris match. And I like that we got the little note at the end with the death sentence, because it's like, yeah, these guys should be working together to accomplish what they want.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. And obviously, me being a big Storm fan, I enjoyed that too. I feel like he's matured a lot. And again, I have to say that as much as we were breaking balls about this feud making no fucking sense, they have, to TNA's credit at this time, they have stuck with it, and it has gained a little momentum over the past couple shows. So the fact that they're still feuding, and it's been, maybe a month that it's been going on,
yeah.
I have to give them credit. They did not have a short attention span when it came to this feud. So I'm happy with that. Your match times, the Harris match went 5:12. And this match went 6:23. So
okay.
So,
So again, yeah, not too bad. And we'll talk more about them later on. Do we go backstage about the? Is this when Bob Armstrong's talking to Jarrett and Killings, or is that later?
That is later. We're learning more about the TNA auction and how I want to go back in time and bid on a dinner date with Jerry Lynn. yeah. You know, what was such a mind fuck during that segment is that you have all this awful stuff with Russo and women, and there's more stuff later on with the hair of the AMW and Belladonna. And here's good old Jerry Lynn talking about an auction to have dinner with him, to help with breast cancer charities, which is important to him because his first wife passed away from breast cancer. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, what is this show? Mm. We're beating women over and over and over again. And here comes lovable Jerry Lynn talking about his wife deceased, who's deceased from breast cancer, and he wants to raise money for her.
If I can raise money in my wife's honor and memory, but also get a date with one of you rats out there, it's a win-win for old Jerry Lynn.
I'm going to take care of you, Athena.
And more importantly, thanks, Jerry Lynn, but we need Jeff Jarrett to take down Russo and these damn Harris brothers.
Charity. We've got no time for charity.
Oh, my God. So then we do go back to the ring, and this will be a tough one to go through just because of the amount of time and moves in here. This was a bringing back the concept from episode 2, the 4-way double elimination match to determine the number one contender for Jerry Lynn's X Division title, Easy Money versus Kid Cash, who, for those playing at home, this week he is a face. Versus AJ Styles versus Amazing Red. And Amazing Red gets attacked by AJ before he even comes down the ramp. AJ gives him a Styles Clash on the ramp, and that takes Red out of the match. So he is replaced by Joel Maximo, who's going to fight his second match of the night.
Yes. just a reminder, as we said, Jerry Lynn was supposed to fight Sonny Siaki, but apparently... due to an injury, he is not. And that's why Siaki wrestled on the dark match. So apparently that match will be next week. So on next week's show, Jerry Lynn will defend the X Division title against Sonny Siaki, so, which was supposed to be this week. So, yeah.
My hopes were immediately dashed because there were 57 minutes left in the show. And I was hoping that this would last the entire 57 minutes. Mm. They were trying to compare this to the one from week 2. And if I recall correctly, I could be wrong here, but it was AJ, Low-Key, Jerry Lynn. And was it Hoovy or it was Psychosis, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the four of them, I mean, that was one of the best matches we saw during our entire run here. And this one was fine. It was just not as long. And, you know, Low-Key and Psychosis and Jerry Lynn are better than Easy Money, Kid Cash, and Joel Maximo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this works like a double elimination gauntlet match. It's a little wonky, the rules. So we started off with Cash and Joel, and they're going to face off. And then once one of them loses, then another person comes in the ring, and once you lose two matches, you're done. So Cash with an early advantage and pretty much won immediately with an easy German suplex to a bridge. One of the things I don't really care for in these matches is it's like a Survivor Series match where a move that would never beat a guy in a regular match all of a sudden it becomes a finisher. And AJ comes in to take on Cash, and the same thing happens. Joel pinned Cash with the German suplex to a bridge, because then it ended up being Joel Maximo versus AJ.
Yeah, they were really focusing on giving Maximo like a little mini spotlight in this match.
Yeah, so he got was in there with AJ. AJ did the back flip into the death drop, which was pretty cool, And then same thing, you know, AJ is known for the Styles Clash or the Spiral Tap, but instead wins with a Kryptonite Crunch. You know, I don't know where the, what does Sheamus call that? That move?
Was it White Noise?
White Noise, yeah. Kryptonite Crunch was back in the day. So Cash has lost one, Maximo's lost one, Easy Money is in. Style of the match changes, no pun intended there. There's like more power moves. Easy Money's like hits a suplex, a power bomb. Eventually tries to do the Bronco Buster, but crotched himself on the post.
Yeah.
He reversed the Styles Clash by dropping AJ on his neck and then upsets AJ, pinning him after he hits the money clip. So everyone's lost once except for Easy Money. So we're essentially halfway through the match right now. Kid Cash comes in, botches badly a double springboard Rana. Easy Money drops Cash on his tailbone. They look like they're going to the finish. This is a spot that's been done a couple times, and this was done in ECW with the two of them as well, where Easy Money's going to powerbomb Cash off the top rope, and then Cash does a Hurricane Rana in midair. They did that. That was like in the opening to ECW towards the end days of that company. That should have been the finish, but Easy Money like kicked out of it. And then AJ Styles interfered, hit him, I think, with a chair or something, and Cash is eliminated completely from the match. Joel should have come in at that point, but AJ came in anyways and then gives Easy Money the Styles Clash. So now Easy Money has one pinfall. Now it's Joel and AJ. They go back and forth. AJ takes full control after Plum T gets involved, and it just kind of dies here a little bit. Joel starts, you know, when he ends up showing that he's a pretty decent singles wrestler. Like you said, Nate, he's getting a little bit of a rub here. Like he starts grounding AJ, which is unlike his style. But the shock was that Maximo reversed AJ, got him into a tilt-a-whirl, and rolled him up. And it was a real fast count, but he eliminated AJ Style for the upset. A bit of a revenge for taking out Red. And AJ and Mortimer still stay down at ringside, which is pretty dumb. The ref's watching him the entire time. Joel Maximo basically pins Easy Money, but the ref doesn't see it because he's just still watching and talking to AJ and Mortimer. So AJ, while the ref's talking to Mortimer, Plumtree hits Joel with a chair. Easy Money's like, well, I'll take this, and gave him the Easy Driver, gets the win, though he makes it known that he didn't really want AJ's help. So every match so far has had a ref distraction. We're three matches in. Easy Money gets the win, gets the eventual title shot against the winner of Lynn and Siaki. Whew, that was tiring. I'll let you guys go for a bit.
No, take a breather, Steve. Once again, the X Division saves this pile of crap of a show.
Does it, though, Scotty? Does it?
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. You know me. Glass half full. You know what I mean?
When I mean, they put a dirty sock over the open wound, but the wound's still festering there, Scotty.
Yeah, I know. I know.
We're not bleeding out, but...
But it's getting close. It's seeping. And we have Dark Steve thinking the glass is three quarters empty. Somebody's got to think it's half full. I liked Easy Money. I think he's a good... I think he's a decent worker. Yeah. You can tell, and I know it does happen eventually, but I'll say this now. You can tell that AJ is going to be meant for Russo's little cabal. He just has that frat boy dick face look. Mm-hmm. And with every week, and you're going to laugh at the fact that I'm actually saying this. Mortimer Plumtree is, as a character, is slowly but surely not fitting in this fucking company. So, you could definitely see that that partnership will probably fade within the next couple of weeks, I would think, or maybe in the next month by the time we get into 2003. But I thought it was a decent match. It was a lot of fun. This is where TNA starts doing kind of their wonky gimmicks. It's not a single elimination. It's a double elimination. So good luck keeping track of that, Nate.
But yeah, I think they should have explained it better, too. Like, they didn't really break it down for the viewer if you didn't know what was going on.
Right. No, definitely. Definitely not. But overall, I thought it was a good match.
Yeah, a solid match. You know, talented individuals involved. Not nearly as good as the four-way that Steve talked about earlier. But on this show, you have to take the blessings when they come. And like this was easily the match of the show. And again, just goes to show you why are we wasting so much time on talent or non-wrestlers in Russo's case? Why are we giving them so much time on this TV show, you know, when we have these younger talents we can focus on? Why are the Harris brothers in 5 segments on this show tonight when we've got people like a Maximo, people like AJ that we can focus on? And so this is it's still a company that feels very much in flux. Like, I think pre-Russo, there was always the divide, Steve, between like the old NWA style and this X Division stuff. And now we've got like a 3-way split between the old NWA stuff, the X Division stuff, and then the Vince Russo, to use Chris from LA's chosen word of the night on Chain Reaction. Scott, we got Vince Russo's fuckery here in the middle.
Fuckery, exactly. Fuckery. Vince Russo is certainly the night's nincompoop of the
yes.
night. But, I mean, yeah, the X Division is obviously cooking with gas. But tonight, you're right. I mean, I'm trying to be optimistic, you know me. But I think this show can't even be saved by the one X Division highlight. Because the early stuff is just so bad. And the crowd's trying to stay in it. And this match helped. I mean, it was the longest match of the night. I think it was 1915. So it was definitely the match of the longest match of the night. But we're dealing with extra guys. So easy money. And the other thing I like is that we're looking at a different contender, somebody different to face Jerry Lynn. So that I liked as well. If the show could end right now, I'd be perfectly happy.
Yes.
But we say that a lot and it never happens. What's next, Steve?
Well, next we have a just real brief interaction between Goldie and Sonny Siaki. Goldie says, you know, we haven't got along, but I wish you good luck. And just explaining that they're going to have the title match next week. Lynn actually comes out to talk with Mike Tenay on the top of the ramp and says, hey, I've suffered a partial torn pec. And so I can't wrestle this week. I thought it was going to be real bad. It happened in the match with AJ, but you know I should be good. And then as they're talking, again, out comes the Harris brothers. And this time they're with Bill Behrens, who literally nobody cares about. They're about to put him through a table. No one cares. But Jerry Lynn, who, is by far my favorite part of this show, of every episode that we do, says, you know what, I'm injured, but I'm going to make the save anyways. And Harris brothers beat him up and then use him to put Behrens through the table. So Lynn's out, but going down like a champ. Truth comes out, tries to take on both of the Harrises. Truth ends up getting a chair, but gets it kicked into him a bunch of times. And then they dangerously chuck Truth off the stairwell through the table. Truth had a spin around in midair, so he actually took it instead of going face first. We're getting the Harris brothers and Vince Russo in a main event feud.
You say that so optimistically, because when I think of tremendous tag team wrestling and excellent power workers, I think of the Harris brothers. I think I liked Bob Armstrong's fucking dig on their talent ability in that promo earlier tonight.
Yes, when he's I forgot about that when he's with them. Pretty much puts down.
Talking about your lack of real ability.
Yeah,
talent. That was great.
Yeah, and then Ron's only capable of saying "shove it up your ass." Like he says it like 5 times.
Yeah, this NWA bullshit.
Yeah. Something's going on in the back again, and now Bullet Bob's talking to BG James and asking him to put aside all of his stuff with Jarrett. And Bullet Bob's just an idiot. You and Jarrett take out the Harris twins and Russo. You know, your best buddies. And then before he calls him his son, he's like, hey, can you help me out, brother? Like, he's your kid. He's not your brother. Like, I know it's all the wrestling lingo, but Yeah, so now
that's not the way you talk to your kids all week, Steve, when you're teaching them, the homeschooling. Look here, brother, we're going to do this math right now. It's a shoot.
It's a shoot. Can you help me take on Vince Russo, brother?
Yeah, right.
If you just do this geometry.
Yeah. Fractions is life, brother.
Yeah, I think that's what we learned in this episode, Steve. Well, two things. We learned Vince Russo is still a horrible person, and the second thing is Bob Armstrong is not the best wartime general.
No. We also learned a third thing, is that James Mitchell's personal physician is Dr. Jack Kevorkian, of course. Mm. And so he's out for his match, feigning a cough that he has double pneumonia. And so instead, he says, for a replacement, instead of him, he's going to let Belladonna take on AMW. And she's ready to go. She ties herself up. She's ready to take him on. And so instead of having a beatdown. Yeah, well, I mean, that's what she did. Instead of having Mitchell go against AMW, you get another tag team beatdown of a woman. Mm. So the Disciples come out, which is, you know, the least shocking thing ever. They're beating up AMW. AMW looks stupid. So Mitchell comes in and the ref decides to just continue with this match. So Mitchell's getting the boots in, hitting with the bell. Now he decides, okay, now I'm going to let Belladonna take the match. The ref basically says, yeah, this is okay. So we have, it's like the battle that who could be the dumbest Armstrong of the night.
No, really. What a, not exactly the Rhodes family, that's for sure.
Yeah, so Scott Armstrong just kind of letting this go. So how is AMW going?
Dan, can I do this, brother?
Yeah, brother. He's, yeah, he didn't ask. Didn't ask Scott Armstrong to go help him out against the Harris brothers. So in order to beat Belladonna, AMW has to do each of their singular finishing moves. So the catatonic and the 8-second ride and the death sentence in order to, and I guess if they pin Belladonna, that means they beat James Mitchell. So yeah, they just destroyed her. And so the feud is going to continue on. They're going to get their hands on Mitchell. At some point, we're going to have a blow-off match. Because you're right. Like, I like AMW. I don't really care for Brian Lee. I don't care for them at all. James Mitchell, I think sometimes he can be really entertaining. This has been a feud, though. Like you said, Scott, that's gone on for a good month at this point. So it feels like they're building to something. Hopefully they are.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was it for that skit. And then we go backstage. I don't think we really have to talk more about that, but we go backstage, and I thought Kurt Hennig was gone, but nope, he's back there wearing his Minnesota wrestling sweatshirt, and he's with Mike Tenay, and that was three digs he kind of had at Brock Lesnar. He's wearing his Minnesota wrestling shirt. He says he's the greatest athlete from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He said that he's in the greatest shape of his life, which is interesting seeing that he's going to drop dead in 2 months. And talks about he feels revived after he took down Lesnar in the plane. So that's his third dig on Lesnar. The only other thing of note here is that he has nothing against Russo, but feels that Russo should be in the back and not on camera. So he is going against Jeff Jarrett for the title next week.
Why? So why, Jarrett, Steve Willie?
Yeah, I think Hennig's a face. Jarrett's a face now. But
is this going to be a catch-as-catch-can?
No. There's going to be Vince Russo is going to be involved in the ring in some way.
Catch-as-clutch-chest.
Yes. Oh, Jesus. So now we get the Harris brothers for a fourth time, possibly a fifth time. We see BG James in the back, and oh my God, he's laid out by chairs too. Bullet Bob is like, oh, damn you, Harris brothers. So again, it's like everything.
They're always one step ahead of me.
Yeah. They're brilliant.
Everything in this show is telegraphed. Every single thing. And every match has a ref bump and a distraction, and every match has substitutions. So now it's Jeff Jarrett against both of the Harris twins. And hey, in this match, It's a regular match, but chair shots are fine. Jarrett's definitely a face now. Crowd's cheering for him. They are brawling out in the crowd. Jeff Jarrett's getting thrown around with chairs. He hits them. It's just back and forth. Kind of truth kind comes out. His ribs are wrapped up. He's very ginger. And then he distracts one of the brothers who is too dumb to hear Jeff Jarrett giving the other twin a stroke and have the pinfall right next to him. So Jeff Jarrett beats both of the Harris brothers. I don't know what this means. Like, what was the point? Does that mean the Harris brothers are gone? I don't think so, but that's what Barm Armstrong says. That's what's going to get them out of TNA, apparently. I don't know. So now the Harris brothers are beating up Truth again. BG James comes out for the save, but we all know what's happening. He ends up hitting Truth with the chair. So now we have Vince Russo, BG James, and the Harris twins. Are these not like the three worst wrestlers that we've seen in TNA? And
Vince Russo jumps into BG James' arms.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Austin and Triple H created the two-man power trip.
It's like the fucking most ridiculous thing ever.
And not only are they arguably the three worst wrestlers on the roster right now, Steve, but if this is your upstart, young, hip, sex faction, and we're starting with the Harris twins and BG James, like that's the young youth demographic we're going for, Steve.
Yes.
These young upstarts.
Young upstarts. None of them in the shape to wrestle.
Yeah, this is what you want to see. To
turn heel, and we'd really have a bunch of guys on life support.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So the worst faction ever, and this is like, this whole thing has been done. We have the Harris brothers joining Vince Russo. We have Jarrett essentially as a face and joined together with Truth. And then all of a sudden, as we fade to black, everyone looks up top and I'm like, who's coming out? Like, someone's coming to come out for the save and help Truth? No, it's Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
But just for 30 seconds. And they're like, what's Paul Bearer doing here? Today's quick to say, you mean the man formerly known as Paul Bearer? And then,
because we can't afford to write any checks.
Yeah. It's, it's typical Russo television. You go through four angles in the course of a 2-hour show.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no reason for Paul Bearer to come out here. I'm sure there's no reason for him to be involved, period, you know, over the next couple weeks. But, yeah, there's just so much to throw out the wall and with guys that no one really cares about. I mean, they did effectively turn Jarrett face here, and the crowd was way behind him. But as someone who's not really a fan of Jarrett, even I will make Jarrett a huge baby face against the Harris twins and Vince Russo and BG James.
Yeah, this is just a weird ending, and obviously hindsight is 2020, but I think even in 2002, Steve Willie, like if you're like, okay, we're forced into doing this Vince Russo thing, instead of BG James, why wouldn't you make the first big turncoat? Why wouldn't you make it somebody like Sonny Siaki? So that way we can get this guy over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think he does end up joining Sex later, but
yeah.
There's no impact, no pun intended, by the time he joins.
Yeah, there's really not. Yeah, because you can have these young, cocky heels. I'm trying to, like, okay, let's pretend the Harris twins and BG James aren't there. You can have Siaki. Trying to think, like, who else, like... I mean, Easy Money could be a possibility.
Yeah, like Siaki, like a lot of the extra bit, like AJ, who ends up joining eventually.
Yeah, I mean, those are guys right there. But instead, and then
at this
you
point,
have...
like their big limitation, if you want to say limit the what their strengths and weaknesses are, Steve, is they're still learning how to craft characters and do promos. And for all of the completely justified hate that Vince Russo gets, at least he can talk.
Yes. He just needs someone writing for him.
Yes.
And then not to go off script. Strip? Did I say strip?
Yeah. Well, that's after the show.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is that episode of TNA. It was awful.
We're stuck in this war between two incompetent generals. Like, if you're Vince Russo and I'm waging war against the old establishment, I'm going into battle with these Harris brothers and BG James, and then on the other side, Bob Armstrong. Like, what game plan are you running here, sir? You're just asking people to team with Jarrett, not realizing current feuds going on in your own company.
And two people that no one care about at all.
It's ridiculous. Out of 10, I give this show a 3. And 2.5 of it is mostly the four-way.
Yeah.
And the other half is seeing Paul Bearer. Oh, I'm sorry. Previously Paul Bearer at the end.
Yes.
I think he goes back to Percy Pringle the next week.
Yeah, I figured that's where he was going to go. Yeah, I go a 2 just because the stuff that was decent was so taken back by this, which might be the worst I've ever given a show.
Yeah.
It was just so, I just have a pit in the stomach. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Yeah, I thought the X Division match was good. I thought Piper cut a solid promo. Mm-hmm. But, like, the Russo stuff, the stuff with Athena, like, that weighs a lot of this show down. And again, looking back with hindsight, there was an opportunity here to actually tell a good story. But you had to go and Russo it all up. And so, like, you took a show that could have, like, at best, this could have been like a 6 or 7 if the invasion story was done well. But now, at most, I'm giving this a 3, but probably I'm closer to you, Steve, giving it a 2.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'd like to hope that once we get out of 02 and get into 03, things start to clean up a little bit. And I think they will. All right. That was great. Well done, Steve. You may go shower now. And we will all go to Chuck E. Cheese and not the strip club like you wanted us to earlier when you said we're all going to go strip or whatever the heck you said. Slip and strip. Great show, guys. I'm happy to not talk about Mania anymore, so now I don't have to. we'll be back in 2 weeks. I don't know what we'll be talking about because Lord knows what the landscape is.
Fair enough.
We'll see. Yeah. We could talk about anything, really. Blank canvas for episode 147. However, I did say we were going to make an announcement. Now, normally, our next episode, I have the shoe, and I would be choosing our next New Japan Classic match picks. Well, after thinking about things, and when Chad came on our live show 2 weeks ago, I was kicking the idea around, and I, of course, put the idea forth to my two compadres here, and they were gleefully accepting of the idea, and I greatly appreciate both of them agreeing to it, because I think it'll be a lot of fun. For the rest of 2020, we are going to suspend, just for the year, the New Japan picks, because they're kind of in limbo right now. So New Japan will go on the shelf. We'll go back to it in 2021. But from now until the end of the calendar year, we'll be doing WCW Classic match picks, because all three of us are going to be doing ballots, and we'd like to thank you, our awesome listeners, will be doing ballots as well. So starting with me in 2 weeks with our next episode, and then to Nate and then Steve and et cetera, we will be giving you a couple of our nominations for matches that could be on the greatest WCW match ballot, whether it's ours, yours. So I think it'll be a lot of fun, guys. I think a change of pace, something different. What do you think, Steve? I'm interested in your thinking, Steve, because I haven't really talked much WCW with you over the years. I know Nate's favorites, and most people know my favorites. But we'll come up with some surprises. But, Steve, I'm actually looking forward to your choices, because we've never talked a ton of WCW. So I'm kind of excited.
Really? Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited to see what you have in your head. Mm. Nate, of course, wants to dive right into the White Castle of Fear. And
White Castle of Fear is still better than this episode of Impact.
Yeah, that is true. Yes, that is quite true. So in 2 weeks on our next episode, I will be giving us 2 of my nominations for matches that I'm going to put on my greatest WCW match ballot. So stay tuned for that in 2 weeks. And then again, whatever's going on in the world of wrestling, any news and notes, we'll be 2 weeks closer to Money in the Bank and see if WWE has any news about that. And if TNA has plans on anything. NWA, of course, I mean, Crockett Cup's in limbo, Impact's in limbo. Everybody's in limbo. So really for us, in terms of our news and notes, it's pretty much a episode-by-episode basis. We'll see what happens in 2 weeks. But we'll talk about something fun. And then we will have a couple of WCW classic match picks for all of you to chew on about your ballots. So, been a lot of fun, guys, as always. For Brother Nate, for Brother Steve, I am Brother Scott. You've been in a full arena main event. Well, virtual anyway, because I don't want to get anybody endangered. Have fun. Watch what you'd like. Get your ballots ready. And take a shower, unlike Russo, and make sure your jeans fit. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
You were talking earlier about that Piper promo, and so I was doing some research. Like, I zoned out when you were covering the various Harris Brother appearances. And I did some research, and the person that accompanied him is actually his son.
Yeah.
And he owns a small business, which is something, you know, you and I talk about on the Kings of Sport Patreon on TDT Talks. Like, now is a good time to support small businesses. So if anybody wants to support Roddy Piper's son, his name is Pete, and he owns a food establishment. So you can go online and check out Peter Piper's Pickled Peppers and Produce Parlor. You're welcome.
I'm Peter Piper. Pick peppers. But run rock. Rhyme. Humpty. Dumpty. Fell. Down. That's his heart. Time. Jack me. Nimble. What? Nimble. And he was quick. But jam. Mass mud. Faster. Jack saw Jay's dick. Now little Bo Peep Cole lost her sheep. And Rip Van Winkle fell a hell asleep. And out of tune summer in Wonderland. Jack serving Jill bucket in his hand. And damn, that's the stage making out that sound. The turntables might wobble, but they don't fall down.
Beep to-